We've just got through 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. It means we finished Nisan and we've just entered the year. That is a new phase of the year. And the phase that we're going through, the whole period that we're living through now, is called Sfiras HaOmer. That's the counting of the Omer. Last week we looked at some of the hidden ideas in a messianic concept, because Nisan is a month of redemption. This month, we've just begun a serious period in the year. It means the Omer, the Sfiras HaOmer, is a heavy time for us. A lot of negative things happened during this time of, we don't have rejoicing now. And there's something serious going on. So let's try and understand the serious subject. Last week was more perhaps inspiring in a sense of the messianic dream. But now we have to understand some of the hard work that has to be done to bring that about. It may not sound so inspiring at the first level, but that's where the real inspiration has to be, because it's the ideas in this area that one can take and use to work on oneself to try and bring about personal growth and ultimately a whole new world. Now, the thing to understand, the difficulty, what we have to understand now, what we have to think hard together to work out, is this. Sfiras HaOmer has got something to do with counting. That's the whole effort, that's the whole exercise that we do now. We count 49 days. That needs some explanation. What is this business of counting? What's 49 anyway? Which brings us to the whole idea that you look at things from a Kabbalistic point of view, you'll see that we always deal with numbers. 3, 1, 3, 7, 13, 49, 50, many significant numbers. It's a confusing thing. What are all these numbers? What do they mean? What does counting have to do with anything? What spiritual growth is there? Because we count 49 days. Not sure we can deal with it all in one discussion, but let's try. Let's begin. If you want just to see a bit of the light that's possible to gain from this idea, so we should understand the following thing. Tonight is the third night of the third week of the Omer. It's a very amazing time. That is the 17th night of the Omer tonight. 14 days is 2 weeks. 15, 16, 17. That's the third day of the third week of the Omer. If there's a time that you wish, if a person wants to change his life, if there's things that you don't have in balance, there are things in your personal life. Last week we spoke about what we have to do in general as a people. But if a person's going through things in his life, something or many things, that are not in balance, a person's got a sense of unease, that he's maybe not on the right track, or there are things that are out of, not coordinated, not functioning, not synchronized, not functioning together. So today, if you work on it today, you can fix it up. Starting from sundown now until tomorrow night is a time when mystics say that there's a special glow, there's a special light that comes down from the mystical world that's able to achieve harmony. So if you have a problem where there's a lack of harmony somewhere, it might be a parent and child, it might very well be in a marriage situation, it might be an internal balance problem. That it might even be more serious than that, certain kind of illnesses, many things. That if you work on today, so you have a very, very special power that assists you in that area. It only assists the amount that you work on. It's not a free gift. Based up we discussed before was a free elevation. All you have to do is desire to hook onto it or connect yourself to it, and then you get elevated. Now we're not going through that anymore. This is a phase now where there's no handouts now. It means that you're responsible for all the work. But you have to work in an area where there's assistance. And the forces are set up now. Each day is set up with a different force. But today's force happens to be the force of balancing unbalanced forces. But for those who find the technicalities maybe a bit daunting, I'll just share with you a mystical application of this idea. With your time. Cautious how we say these things in the fabric orders. Let's put it this way. We could put it this way. That according to the mystical understanding, there's a certain light that surrounds the body. I'm a bit cautious about this because the last time I discussed this in the shir, I had a phone call from a certain rabbi. Must be if I'm teaching Hinduism. I went to that effect, and I think he was right. But anyway, let's try and understand. They get the ideas from us. That's where their mystical wisdom comes from. Its origin is in the Kabbalistic source. Anyway, it says in certain mystical sources that there's some kind of light that surrounds the body. They call it, if you look in the English translation of these things, it's called an aura. Aura actually means, not really an English word at all, it's aura. An aura is a mystical word, Hebrew word, which means a light. It is a light that surrounds the body. Actually, it surrounds the head in a very powerful way, which is called in English, they call it a halo. But actually, it's a word in Tehillim. It says, "Behiloi neiroi alai roshi." But the light of his that surrounds my head. Hilo, that's the word. So these are Jewish ideas. But this light, the trouble with, of course, if you think of it physically, it is nothing wrong to think about it literally. It is literal. It's not physical in the sense that you think. Anyway, the point is this: there is some kind of light. So there are certain mystical sources that say that the light that surrounds the body has different colors. And depending on your particular personality or certain spiritual abilities or forces in your personality, so different colors are emphasized. And it says that somebody who is a doctor, a healer, somebody who's a healer, to have a technical credential, a qualification that you have a university degree, got nothing to do with this. It doesn't mean you know how to heal people. But somebody who knows how to heal people really has that power. It says that his aura has a special golden, something to do with yellow or gold. So now the question is, what's the meaning of that? So one beautiful thing to understand is this, that there's a mystical idea that the forces in the body, there are mystical forces in the body that surround different organs, different parts of the body. And each of these, there are seven points in the body. There's an Eastern system of bodily movement and development that's connected with the breath. I'm trying to stick to the Hebrew words over here. But there is a system that people do, certain exercises that are connected with breathing and so forth. It's a very deep spiritual system. Not so straightforward from a Jewish point of view necessarily, but nevertheless, there is such a system. And it uses the knowledge of these forces that flow through the body, which again is a straightforward Kabbalistic idea. That's just one particular application of it. By the way, we need to put in an introduction here, which is that it says that all Eastern wisdom came from Kabbalistic sources. It says that Abraham sent his children to the East with special gifts. The gifts were non-physical gifts, and that's why spiritual wisdom became developed in the East. We have to know that in case you think that's the source. The source is in the Kabbalistic wisdom. It was sent there for a special reason, to be separated from the West. That's another discussion. But nevertheless, so if you find application of these ideas that sound very Eastern, you're right. It is definitely the core of Eastern wisdom that flows out from many of these ideas. So it says that of all the points in the body, and we'll try and discuss some of them together to understand these sort of, each one being a focus of energy, force. So you have one that's called the right hand side, we call that chesed. You have one that's called the left hand side, we call that gevura. These are two opposite forces, male and female. Kindness or giving and limitation of giving, or generosity and discipline. I don't know how you translate them in English, but these are the first two. But tonight, the third night of the third week, the third of these points, is a point exactly in the middle of the body. Somewhere in the center, the whole body, but it's what ties together the left and the right. That's what it is. And this is the third week, which is when that light shines brightly, and it's the third day of the third week. It means that within that force, it's the subsection of that force that's also that force. It's a special multiplication of that energy. That means that this part of the body, the center, is the part that connects the right and left hand. Perfect balance. Now, if you want to hear one wonderful secret about this, it says that the Beis HaMikdash, which is the point of meeting, of connection between forces, that's the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, it stands in the portion of Benjamin. And Benjamin, amazing, amazing secret. Benjamin is called in the Torah, Yedid Hashem. Yedid Hashem means the beloved one of Hashem, very close to Hashem. But certain mystical sources point out, if you look at the word Yedid carefully, you'll see it spells Yad Yad. With two hands. means the right and left meet exactly. That's the point of the body where the right side and the left side, the two extremes, the right hand and the left hand, those two are balanced together, meet perfectly. It did. Yad, yad. That central area, that central zone, the third of these mystical areas, that represents the power to balance two things that are unbalanced. The right hand is an extreme in one way, the left hand is extreme in another way. Try and discuss this more fully. The center is something that balances the two extremes. And that represents it. This point has a name also in the mystical system, it has a point, and the root of the word that we use to define this point is Pa'er. In Hebrew, Pa'er. Pa'er means glory, or glow, some kind of shining, something very wonderful. The color that's associated with this point is that golden or yellow color. Each one has a certain color. Whatever color it is, not important, but there's a certain color associated with it. There's a certain day of the week, of course, because there's 7 days. All sevens in the world fit into this idea. What's the connection between the glow of somebody who knows how to heal people and this point in the body? Not hard to work out. This point in the body is the point that represents balance. And a healer is someone who knows how to restore balance. Illness is something being out of balance. Something, physical, mental, whatever it is, but something's not balanced. One extreme is pulling more than the other. And somebody who knows how to heal knows how to bring balance into a situation that's not balanced. And therefore, he is an emanation, strong emanation of this area. In fact, if you want to see it even more clearly, the word Pa'er, if you reverse the letters in Hebrew, it spells Rofe, which means a healer. Because that's exactly what it is. It means somebody's able to... Now, some of these ideas, to understand some of these ideas and how they operate, let's backtrack and understand the whole concept of counting and what it means. You see, the difficulty for us, these are very Kabbalistic ideas. But they're very explicit in every aspect of Judaism. There's nothing you do in Jewish Torah life that isn't based on these things. Every pasuk in Torah is based on this idea. Everything you do. When you daven Shmoneh Esrei, the first bracha is Avraham. Talks about Avraham, which is Seset, the second is Yitzhak, the third is Yaakov. The first three always go in that order. There's nothing that doesn't go that way. You do the Hakopas, and you go around 7 times, you're going through this system. All sevens in the world, and actually we'll try and see that actually all numbers in the world, seven is not nothing different about seven, just helps you understand this idea. All fits into this thing, so you really can't understand anything in Torah without understanding this idea. So although it's Kabbalistic, we'll permit ourselves just to discuss a little bit of the more revealed aspects of this idea. But the first thing we have to understand is the root of the idea of counting, and also why this is a negative time. What is it that builds you while you count, and yet has a danger? Let's understand that. And how do the different systems of counting fit together? Right? You'll find many seeming conflicts here. For example, we have a custom now, many people learn Pirkei Avos now, right? Which is also a system of working on yourself in measured ways. You don't just work on yourself in general, like Pesach when you get an uplift. Here you work through 49 days where you actually work on individualized segments of your personality. Today you should be working on balance. That's what you should be working on. Exact middle of the road, exact equilibrium. That's what you should be working on today. The first week you work on unlimited giving. The second week you work on tremendous self-discipline. The third week you work on perfect balance. And so it goes each week, and each day of each week has something that people are taking seriously. They work on these things, and they focus on it all day. They strengthen it tremendously, and at the end they put it all together. Maybe as we go through Sfera, we'll be able to try and learn this idea more specifically, in more detail. You'll see that there are conflicting ideas. For example, in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, it says, "Ashlosha dvarim ha'olam ha'emet." The world stands on three things. That's not surprising, right? After what we discussed it already. Three things. Torah, al-avoda, al-gemilus, chasodim. These three things, and it fits perfectly into what we discussed already. Maybe we'll get time to see it. So the world stands on three things. But you'll see places where it says not so. It says Olam Chesed Yibone. The world built only on Chesed. Only on one thing. It doesn't say the world Olam Chesed Yibone. It has a much deeper mystical meaning also. But in a simple meaning, it means the world is built on one thing called Chesed. And in other places it says it's not built on that. It's built on Chesed, Bura, and this other third element that we mentioned before. So why is there conflict? How can it be that three things is one thing? And how are the three things actually seven? And how are the seven 13? Now, there's a lot of depth and what seems to be confusion over here, and we have to try and sort it out together. Let's look first of all at the idea of counting And we'll try and show from the words themselves how some of these ideas come across. All we can do this evening is just begin to scratch the surface of the revealed, open part of the mystical wisdom. Can't hope to get any depth in any area. Just the beginning of an overview that there's something going on. That's all we can hope to do. The mystics say that counting is the idea of an infinite power that breaks down into finite components. Again, we have Hashem, that concept of Hashem, who is one, cannot be broken down into parts, and yet he manifests in a world that has parts. There are no two ways about it. There's a big mystical discussion whether the world is real or isn't real, whether you really are here, whether you aren't here, but everybody agrees that it's actually a oneness, exactly what that means. I don't know if we'll see it together, but nevertheless, there is an aspect of the world, whether it's an illusion or not an illusion, but there is an aspect of the world that is broken down into parts. And actually, that's a manifestation of oneness. So we have to understand that somewhere there's a changeover from something that's one until it reveals itself as a world that's in many parts. That's the beginning of counting. When you start to count is when you take one and you make two. When you take one, the word one, the concept of one in Torah, doesn't mean one as opposed to two. It means one as opposed to anything else. Right? That's why the Torah says Yom Echad. It says that when the world was created, Hashem made, and it says day one. It doesn't say the first day. Because it wasn't the first with relation to the second. It was just all there was. When you have a second, then you have a first. When you have two, you have a breakdown. But when you have one, you only have... Right? We couldn't understand a world like that. We wouldn't be in a world like that, because we wouldn't be here as a separate being. But that would be some kind of concept of oneness. Where one becomes two, where the oneness breaks down into parts, into details, that is where you have a possibility of a world being manifest like this, and it's the only way we can relate to any kind of reality. We can't see, we can't perceive the oneness. If we would be there, we wouldn't be us. We would just be part of the oneness. So we function in a world where already the parts are manifest. That, the mystics say, is called the hair. Hair. All these ideas have to be learned from the body. If you understand the seven areas that the body shows, manifests in the world, then you understand this idea. So if you look at the body, you can understand this. The hair teaches us this idea. Amazing thing. The mystics say that the hair is called channels. The hair is called tubes or sinorot, pipes, little channels, let's say, through which energy flows. What does that mean? The hair is a concept of a hidden energy that flows outside into measured, into finite segments, as opposed to just being one thing. Right? It's a remarkable thing. If you think about it, you'll see that the concept of counting in Hebrew is mispar. Spar. Right? That word means very many interesting things. Mispar, that root means a number, and as opposed to just a total oneness, it means finite numbers. It also means to tell something. It means to tell, sipur or sefer, because you can't tell somebody something unless you can convey all the components. You can't say the unity of the thing. No human can experience all that at once. And therefore telling a thing means telling one detail, then the next, means you have to break it down into its components so that it can be told. That's called sipur. That's mispar. The word sfar in Hebrew also means a border. It means limitation. Araya sfar. What's called in Hebrew the border cities. The sfar is a word in Torah that means the edge of the country. It means a border, because that's exactly what it is. It's where the infinite starts to get limitations. But a very interesting meaning, a very interesting application of the word mispar is to cut the hair. Did you know that? Tisporet in Hebrew. Right? So the idea of cutting the hair is based on the same root. A remarkable thing. It's also the mystics say, this is not so easy for us to discuss in this forum, but the mystics say that's why you find hair on certain parts of the body. You find hair on parts of the body that are always connected to outflow of energy. What's called hashpah. Hashpah, wherever you see that the body manifests the energy to affect something in the world, the origin of a site in the body that can affect or create or produce in the world, so then you see hair on that part of the body. Of course, as we often said before, if you grew up in an evolutionary kind of system, so then it wouldn't bother you too much why there's hair on various parts of the body. There's an accidental gorilla, like another accidental gorilla. That gorilla happens to have hair like this and like that, and so you've got hair like this and like that. But that's not That's not how we approach the world. We want to understand why the body looks the way it does. We understand it from a deeper source. And the mystics say that the hair is a manifestation of an outflow of energy. A very, very powerful manifestation of an outflow of energy. And that's why you find that the hair, the head, has a lot of hair. Because that's the source of outflow to the whole body. That's the origin of everything that happens. It's why the arms, and all organs on the body that reach out, that do, that produce in the world, the root of the organ, or that part of the body, always surrounded by hair. Also, by the way, why males have more hair than females. Because the male is the one who in the outward world goes out, does, gives. The female is the one who receives and produces inwardly. That's how a child is formed. The male contributes a spark. The woman receives that, and then she builds it in a hidden way. It's also the reason why married women cover their hair. But I'm not going to go to that right now. It's a revelation. The hair is a revelation of an outflow of energy. So deep and powerful that when a woman rises to the level, the power that she gets in marriage, then something becomes revealed that needs to be hidden. Actually, men don't get to that level with marriage. Men are weaker spiritually, it says. They don't have such a natural, let's say, glow. And men need to get to a stage where they first get married and then rise into a meditational state. And that's why we cover our head with a talus and we dabble. Married men only. Very interesting. I'm very careful with this because of what I got shouted at last time. But, so now we've got, what have we got so far? We've got here the idea that there's an idea of counting, okay? Breaking things down into finite components. And that is a revelation, that's a revelation of how things are in the world. Mispar, number. Now, let's take the next step. How many numbers are there really? What are these numbers? So actually, we're going to talk about seven. The truth is really there are ten. Really there are ten. Ten actually is the perfection of counting. Because in Hebrew, all the numbers, all the units of ten actually add up to one. If you know about gematria and how it works out, you'll see it's not just arbitrary that ten happens to be a decimal type of idea. In fact, you must not make a mistake. The English numerals, the Roman, the numerals of 1 and 2 and 3 are not Torah ideas. You can't learn from that, that because 10 is written by a 1 starting again, you can't learn. It so happens that they knew this mystical idea, and so they numbered it. They used those symbols for those numbers because they understood this concept. But the root of it is in the Hebrew words. And the Hebrew concept of 10 always means going back to oneness at a higher level. That's why 10 people form a minion, which is a whole new reality. It's 10. But what we have to talk about is 7, because 3 of those 10 are always hidden. There are only 7 of them that appear in the body. You see, if you speak to Eastern mystics also, they'll describe to you the 7 areas in the body that are manifest from the spiritual world. But the 3 that are in the head are never manifest, they're only thought. They have names also, and perhaps we'll get time to talk about them, but those 3 things you don't see in a person. What the person's thinking you can't see. But what the thoughts translated into actions that his body does, you do see. And therefore those 3 hidden things, you must have heard of Chabad. These are the initials of these 3 ideas. One application of those 3 ideas that are remaining in the hidden world. But the sphere, the sphere, however, we work on the 7 that are revealed in the world, not the 3 that are hidden. We do work on the 10 also between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We have 10 days when we work on all 10 of them. And at this time we'll talk about those also. But right now we'll talk about 7. The first thing to understand is if there are 7 of these things, why 49? Why 49 days if there's 7? Why break it down into 7 times 7? Yep. So the idea is, let's see if people here don't need this year. The idea is that the definition of the idea is like this. If you follow me, you'll see it very clear. The reason that we have 49 of these elements is because mystically, nothing can be revealed in the world unless it has 7 parts. Because unless the thing has all the components that it needs to be revealed, it couldn't be revealed. You can't reveal anything in the world unless it fits the rules of being in the world. And being in the world means that you have 7. I'll give you an example. Could anything be manifest? Could you see anything in the world if it didn't have 3 dimensions? An object to appear in the world. It must have 3 dimensions. It must have length, breadth, and height, or depth. Else it couldn't be here. Those 3 elements are actually 7 points, if you think about it. Because the 3 dimensions, each one has a left and a right, or an upper and a down, or a back and a forward. That means there are 6, if you want to put it very crudely, there must be 6 faces to a cube. And really a cube is the perfect structure that illustrates these 3 dimensions. Everything can be expressed in components of the faces of a cube. I'm not going to go into the mathematics of it. But if you know a little bit about that, you'll understand that. There are always 6 applications or projections of reality. And of course the 7th is the mystical center, the fact that they're connected. Not just 6 flat things sliding around, but the fact that they're all connected into one. That's your borderline of transcendence.
That's where the six all connect together. So there are really seven. Six physical things, and a seventh, which is Shabbos, which is where everything gets connected together. That's on Shabbos you feel the connection. On Shabbos you can feel, each day you can feel something that's being built. On Shabbos what you feel is nothing being built, just everything coming together. The coming home of everything you did all week. That's what Shabbos, that's why we don't build on Shabbos. That's why we don't make anything new on Shabbos. I don't want to do that. We want what we built during the week to come and connect together. That's the experience you should have on Shabbos. Is connection. It's also why certain aspects of marriage have a special manifestation on Shabbos. Many other applications also. Now, which means this, that you can't have anything without seven. Is that right? You can't have a cube unless you have all six of them and the fact that they're connected. Now, if that's true, let's think carefully. If you can't have anything in the world unless it has all seven components, then of course you can't have any of those seven unless it has seven components, right? Because nothing can be here unless it has all the rules. Which means each of the seven must have seven parts. There's another mystical way to understand it, which is that each of them must connect with all the others also, which means seven facets to each one. Which is a wonderful idea also, because it means that every detail actually has all the details within itself. But nevertheless, every detail has seven, which means it doesn't really have seven, you have 49. Are you with me so far? Actually, if you're thinking, you should ask a question, and that is, it's not 49, it's 49 times 7. Because, I thought the men would understand this better. It's actually 49 times 7. Because every one of those 49 components must have 7 components if it's going to be in the world. And actually, that's correct. And actually, it's not 49 times 7, it's an infinity. Because every element always breaks down into the same components. But if you've said 49, you've said it all. Once you express 49, you've expressed the idea that this is a series, a system, that the components contain all the components of the whole, and you've expressed the idea already, and it's the beginning of the system where you can begin to work on it. You can work on the subsections of each section and put them all together, and as you do that, you can build the whole system. And that's basically what we mean when we say 49 units, right, that build the world. Now we'll have to really understand this, we'll have to understand what are the seven. Right? What are those seven components? You know, I've got to stand for it. Let's begin and see how far we can get. Before we get to the details of the seven, let's try and understand this pathway of the development of 49 things and what it leads to. It's heavy stuff, because you don't mind, right? We can tell stories and... Once in a while we can get a bit heavy. So you have a very amazing idea that the 49 steps, each one is finite, which means it has a sadness. That means it doesn't relate to transcendence. It's only a finite piece, a component of something. But it leads you to the 50th. The 50th is always a concept of that which is beyond all number. That's the mystical world. That's achievement. That's when a person knows things without being able to feel the components anymore. That's when the pieces come together and you have the happiness of the whole thing being there in a way that you can't begin. If you can't break it down into the details, then you spoil it. That's the experience of upliftment, and that's, by the way, why we never count 50. The Torah says that in this time between Pesach and Shavuot, we count 50 days. The Torah says count 50 days. We don't count 49. Isn't that a strange thing? The Torah says, Tisperu chamishim yom, count 50 days. We don't do that. We count 49, the 50th is Shavuot. Why? Because you can't count the 50th. The 50th is not something that can be counted, not 50 as opposed to 49. The 50th is always something that's beyond everything. It's a connection at the end with the beginning, by the way, that's why Nun in Hebrew. Nun. The Hebrew letter Nun, which means 50, starts and ends with the same letter. You know, the mystics say that any Hebrew root that starts and ends with the same letter actually is a cycle. Did you know that? Like Shoresh, for example, the word for a root, because that's always which strikes root again. Or the mystics say a very high example is the word Nagain. Nigun, the Hebrew word for melody, for music, starts and ends with the same letter. Anyone who knows anything about music understands that. Because actually it spirals up and up and up, reaching the same... And if you listen to music and understand it, you'll see that's the way it goes. Actually, the word Nagain, if you really think about it carefully, Nagain is an experience. Music is an experience that can lift a person in that transcendent world. That's why the word Nagain is Nun Gimel Nun. Starts and ends on the same letter, but if you look at it carefully, it spells Nun Gan, the 50th level of the garden. That's what it spells. Because it can take a person into the 50th level of the mystical world. That's why it says by Hayot, Kenagen Amenagen, when the prophet wanted to be able to get into a prophetic state, and he was upset, and he couldn't. So what did he do? He had them bring musicians. Isn't it amazing? He wanted to reach into a transcendent world. And he needed to do it now. So what did he do? He had them play amazing music, and that lifted him immediately into a state where he could connect. Not an accident. If you're sensitive to music, so then it's a very, very powerful thing. And of course, I'm sure you're thinking ahead of me, and you've already explained to yourself that that's why music is always made of seven notes. Isn't that right? A musical scale that has this natural ability. Right? That works on our being in this way. That connects with us in this way. Actually, there's seven notes. The octave, what we call the octave, the eighth is really the same as the first note. But there's seven notes that make up the scale, right? And of course, I'm sure you're thinking ahead of me, that's why there's seven colors in the rainbow, because all that's manifest in the world always breaks down into seven components. Again, if you think that all this bumps into itself by accident and just happened to fall out this way, then of course you really need your head read. That's good for a gorilla, that kind of philosophy. Right? Not anybody's thinking. The world always manifests itself in sense. And of course, that's the reason why the wavelengths of light that make up the seven colors correspond to the frequencies of sound exactly that make up the seven notes. And that's why when you combine the notes in music, you get the same thing as when you combine the colors in light. Did you know that? When you combine the first, let's say, the tonic, dominant, and subdominant notes in music, and you get chords, you get the same combinations as primary and secondary colors in light. So I don't know why you aren't jumping up and down with excitement. It's a wonderful secret. And it's also the secret of why light, in light and in pigment, actually produces different things. You know that? If you take all the light in the spectrum and you shine it into one area, you get white light. But if you take all the colors in the spectrum in pigment and you mix them, you get earth. You get brown. You don't get white. Which is a marvelous mystery. Because actually the molecules of the paint that you're mixing also reflect the light wavelengths. So it should do exactly the same as when you shine the light onto the screen, but it doesn't. When you work in the ethereal dimension of light, you get white. When you work in the physical dimension of pigment, you get earth. So the world naturally, not an artificial thing that we say, there's seven components. The world teaches you that. If you understand the body correctly, you'll see that there's seven forces that connect the body together. Not an artificial thing that we'll choose seven. Not like that at all. If you make up a scale, if you think the musical scale is chosen at random to have seven, try to retune your piano to have six or eight components in the same space and it won't be music at all. There is, by the way, a system of music that has 10 notes in the scale. The semitone, we use semitone or the whole tone scale. Those two different, one has seven notes, one has 10. And the sound of music that's made with 10 notes is completely different than the sound of me. The sound that the music makes when it's built on the seven is very physical. In fact, there are certain spiritual thinkers who say that Western music, which is based on seven-note scale, they call it sordid. Sordid music, because it speaks to the body. If music is represented correctly, the body can find it almost impossible to resist. Whereas ten-note music, the body doesn't respond at all. Music that you might have heard that is composed on a ten-note scale, like Arabic music. The only thing that can enjoy that kind of music is a snake. But the Western ear, our ear, what we are tuned to in the physical, doesn't respond to that 10 note. You follow? The notes don't connect in the way that bring it. The seven notes that are expressed in the world, by the way, it says that in the Messianic phase, we will hear 10 note. We'll hear 10 notes. We'll see 10 colors also. Understand what that means. But it means that the higher three that now are hidden from us will be manifest here. That is what we understand of the system of how the world manifests in seven components. Or better, 49 components that we can work through and understand and relate to. Let's try and see the next step here, the next level of depth. So what do we have? 49 stages, and if you can reach all 49, you can climb out, and you can reach the 50th, which is a state that's beyond all states. It's a meditational pathway, a pathway of work in the personality and meditation. It requires davening, connection, it requires Shabbat seven times, the whole thing. Now, actually, if you think about it, seven times seven really is seven, which means you're reaching Shabbat, and then Shabbat again. The 49, what is Shabbat? Shabbos is a coming together of all the six that were built before, as we said. What's the 49th? What's the 49th of them? Let me give you an example.
just trying to show a few connections between these things. People who think that Torah is some kind of accidental system that somebody put together. If you look in Pirkei Avos, which we started with, it says that if you want to acquire Torah, you want to acquire that 50th level. Torah is the transcendent state. Right? If you want to acquire that level, you must work through all 49 stages. So the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, says there are 48 ways of acquiring Torah. The person who wants to have his neshama, a real depth, an emanation, a real connection with the light of Torah, he must have 48 mitzvos, right? 48 kinyonim, 48 things that you need to acquire Torah. You need to learn with other people, right? You need to be able to listen, you need to be able to think logically. There are 48 qualities of personality, intellectual and personality, that you need in order to acquire spiritual wisdom. So the question is, why 48? Why didn't you ask that? It was bothering you, right? Why 48? Not 49? It can't be 48. Why does the Mishnah talk about 48? Why doesn't it just the 49th one? It must be 49. So what is the 49th? It means, if a person wants to work on acquiring Torah, he needs humility, he needs all the different things. So when he's done 48 of them, what must be the 49th? What do you do? Oh, beautiful. What do you do? Let's say a person is working on 48, he chooses 49 days, 50 days, and he wants to reach Torah, and the time to do it is now. He starts at Pesach, and he works each day working through one of these 48 things. He doesn't only work on the mystical things we're talking about, he works also on those 48 things, and they correspond to each other. Of course, exactly. But you work on each of the 48. What do you do on the 49th day? Doesn't say anything. You revise all of them. Because before you can get to the 50th, what you have to do is bring them all home. You have to put the connection of them all together. So of course the Mishnah doesn't have to list it. It's not a new thing. The Mishnah understands that you know what you're doing. The Mishnah doesn't spoon feed people who are thinking. So it doesn't list something unnecessary. It lists all the 48 you need. The 49th is a time when you don't do anything new. You combine and put them all together. If you do that, the 50th is automatic. You don't count it. You enter that state. Huh? That's what it is. That's why Shabbos, we don't do new things. We just try and bring everything together. We try and enjoy and experience and consolidate and live what we built in the week. That's the meaning of what it means to eat food that you cook before Shabbos. To eat food means that is becoming part of you. The food you eat is assimilated into your being. What becomes part of your being is what you cooked before. The preparation, the putting together of the external components happens until Friday, and it increases at an exponential rate. And on Shabbos, you become one, that you lift yourself into that state. That's why eating on Shabbos has got kedusha to it. Not a physical action. It's an action of spirituality. To understand this idea better, you have the most amazing concept. Stay with me now. This takes a little understanding, a little thinking, but you have a secret and something in your hand that you never had before, if you understand this. There's an amazing pasuk that describes this. It talks about Torah, about getting to that 50th level, about this state, and it puts it this way. It says about Torah that it's Aruka me eretz mido urechava minayam. So it says the pasuk. What does it mean? The Torah is Aruka me eretz mido, its measurement. Its length is longer than the land. Aruka means it is longer. Me'eretz from the land. Midah, its measure. Its measure is longer than the land. Urechava minayam, and wider than the sea. Now what does this pasuk mean? So it sounds a poetic pasuk. Torah is longer than the land. It's wider than the sea. It's, you know, it's like a poetic, you know, hyperbole. Let's try and understand what the pasuk is actually saying. You see, it's the most wonderful thing to understand. For this we'll need a little background. First of all, we have to understand what's the difference between long and wide. Why does it say the Torah is longer than the land and wider than the sea? That means it's long and wide. What does that mean? What's the difference between long and wide? And secondly, why longer than land and wider than sea? Why is the sea all of a sudden wide and the land long? Well, why do you have to see it that way? Nothing accidental in Torah. If it says that, it means that. So in this passage is contained everything we're trying to say this evening. Let's try and understand this. Let's start like this. The idea of eretz, of land, right, is the idea of length. Let's understand. The word eretz, let's understand this, that there's a concept we have called eretz and a concept called shamayim. By the way, shamayim, which means heaven, is based on the root of water. Right? It contains the idea of water, which is like the sea. Let's try to understand this. It means if you want an idea, if you want to see with your eyes, what is the concept of the water or the sea, the ocean, so then you can also understand something about what we call Shemaim. When we say Shemaim, we don't mean the sky. That's not what we mean. The sky that you can see outside is part of what we call Eretz. It's part of the physical universe. It doesn't matter whether it's down here or up there.
That's not what we mean. When we say Shemayim, we mean the transcendent world. It's not up there. It's not down here either. It's here also. It's there also, but not. And of course, that's why the word Shemayim spells Shamin. Sham means what's over there, and also Shem, which means a name, which means the definition of the thing. Let's understand. Eretz means the land, right? The land, which means this world. The Medakim say it's based on the word Ratz, which means to run. Running means going from one point to another. It means movement, which is what this life's all about. It's progress from one state to the next. It's movement, which is what 49 stages are all about. It's working on yourself. It's the idea of working on yourself from one level to the next development. That's what it means. That's Eretz. That's why we talk about heaven and earth. Eretz means this world where you develop, and Shemayim is the place where you go when you experience what you did here, but you can't grow anymore. Shemayim, they say, the mystics say, it means everything you can point to and say there about. Because, you follow, from here it's there. From here you have to move to get there. When you get there, so then everything comes together. That's called Shemayim. When you get to that state, of course the happiness of that state is that everything happens there. Everything comes together, everything is. The sadness of that state, if you can call it that, is that you can't develop anymore. And you can't work on yourself anymore. You can only work on, and that's why you're here. In case you think that this is a very miserable place, and you want to know why it is that you put into this vague darkness with all the doubts and pain that we have. The idea is because here you can rest. You can run. Here you can develop. There you can't. There you can only sit still, right, and feel what it was that you did here, and suffer the pain of seeing what you didn't do, and feel the ecstasy of what you did do. But it's only here that you can move. So understand again. Eretz is a concept of this world, which means movement and development. Now, that's why the Pasuk says, Arukah me Eretz midah, that the measure of Torah is longer than the land. It doesn't say wide. Longer than the land. Because it's a system, and if you think about it, that's why, let's understand, let's compare it with the rest of the Pasuk to see it clear. Urechava min hayam, but it's wider than the ocean. When a thing is wide, it doesn't go any place. If the road's wide, it makes no difference to how you get where you're going. Wideness is a concept, not? Wideness is a concept that might be more comfortable. The only thing wideness makes a difference is to where you are now. If you're in a squeezed position and it's tough now, or it's wide and it's not tough, it's a difference now, but it doesn't make any difference there. Rechava means how wide the place is now, but it's got nothing to do with where you're going. Huh? And that's why it says that the land is long, but the sea is wide. You know, the mystics say that the ocean has no landmarks. You know, it's interesting that they're called landmarks. In the land, you have a landmark. You go from one place to the other, but there are no paths in the sea. The sea is all the same. The water is all the same. Where you define, people who know about the sea, the way you define pathways in the sea is actually from which point of land to which point of land you're going. That's the meaning of the sea. But at sea, there's no direction. That's why sea is called wide. Are you with me? Land isn't wide. Land is a place where you go from one point to the next and no two points are the same. But in the sea, no two points are different. So if you want to understand the process of development, we talk about the land, this world, movement and development. You want to talk about, there's a deep secret here which we can't really go into, and that is, there was a woman whose name was Rachel. I'll leave you to look it up in Tanakh. There was a woman who was of, it's difficult to talk about. She was a woman who was from a certain Canaanite nation whose profession was very immoral. And that was her name. She ended up being one of the greatest women alive. She converted to Judaism and married Joshua. She saved two Jews who came to her house, suddenly understood what was going on in the world, and she lifted herself from that state to a state of being the greatest woman on earth, and married the leader of the Jewish people, the most spiritual man alive. And understand what that means. Convert the one domain into the other. That's what you call conversion. But it's very hard for us. You can look it up and you can think about it for yourself. Nevertheless, that's what we have. Eretz, and think about it a little further, you'll see that's why water is always the dominion, the domain. Water is always the place where you don't have any shape. Water doesn't have any shape. The sea is not only a place where everything is the same, but it's made out of water, because I don't have to point out to you that mind starts and ends with the same letter also. Mind also starts and ends with the same letter. And the mystics say that the water always tries to make things round. Anything that goes into the water always ends up smooth. Doesn't have defining points. It always ends up smooth, and it's always made into water. The mystics actually say when a person falls into the water, tries to suck him in. A person falls into the sea, it becomes very active and it tries to suck him in, but when he's drowned, it becomes calm. That's what they say, if you understand what it means. The water always wants the thing to become like itself. It wants all to be the same, always. Not? That's why it can't have any shape. It always takes the shape of the vessel that it's in. That's what water is. I'll tell you a remarkable secret. amazing, amazing idea. And that is, the mystics say, the most fascinating thing. How do you travel in that? How do you travel there? How do you make land out of the sea? How do you move from one point to another in a place where you can't do that? You go in a ship. The story of Yonah is that the neshama is sent to the world and he gets put in a body. The body carries it through the world. That's what happened. He was sent down, he was put in a ship, and carried through the world. That's what the story is telling you. Try to get out of it, try to not give up these responsibilities, just like we try. But that's, so the idea of a ship, a person in a ship is like a neshama in a body. Or a neshama inside the me that carries me through the world. Are you with me? Again, when a neshama comes down to the world, it's an ethereal, mystical being, and it gets put into me. What's called me. My personality, my body, what makes me, me. And that carries me, my neshama, through the world. In Hebrew, we have an idea that a ship is called oniya. Oniya is the root ani. Right? The word oniya, which means a ship, the root of that word, if you spell it out, you'll see it's the same word as I. You follow? Because the ship is the vessel that carries you over the domain that's called the sea. Right? And that's what the personality, that's what you are that carries you through the world. So what do we have? We have here this. Aruka me eretz midah. The Torah is longer than the land. Urechava min hayam. But it's wider than the sea. Think about it carefully, you'll see this. Stay with me. What does it say? Aruka me eretz midah. Its measurement is longer than the land. The land has measured segments. 49 measured components. Urechava min hayam. But when it comes to the sea, it doesn't talk about measure. When it comes to the sea, it just says it's wide. Because it doesn't have components. It's all one and the same. If you look carefully at the passage, you'll see this. Aruka me eretz midah. Its measurement is longer than the land. What is midah? Mem dalet hay. As of the 49. Midah. Mem is 40. Dalet is 4. And hay is 5. 49. So it means it's 49 are longer than the land. You hear? Aruka me eretz midah. It is longer than the... Measure is 49. But it's wider than the sea is Yud Mem 50. The word sea is made up of Yud and a Mem, which is 10 and 40, which is 50. Now, that's the pathway. The pathway is 49 components, each one developing something on what came before, and ending up at a 50th dimension which doesn't have measure, but which is a transcendent world, which is what we're trying to get to. To get there, you have to work hard. You have to develop each 49, right, which is what the word midah means. It means 49. That's what it is. But let's understand, what are these midahs now? The word for midah, that word which means measurement in Hebrew, got some very interesting meanings. The word midah means a measurement. It means clothing, and it means personality features, character traits. Your midas. What kind of midas does a person have? What kind of character traits in the air? And it means clothing. Right? Midoidvad, it says. Is clothes made out of linen. Right? Or kezokon Aaron, ayurid al pi midoisav, like the beard of Aaron that goes down on his clothes, it says. What if clothes and measurement and personality got to do with each other? It's a very deep mystical idea. The idea is this. Unless you break a thing down into its components, you can't show it. Right? Unless you have the components of the thing, you can't. Imagine if you took music and you played all the notes at once. Well, you couldn't manifest that as music. The only way you can show me the harmony, the totality, is if you broke it down into its, and the components fit together correctly, so then you have the experience. But you have to give it to me that way. If I am in the world, in the transcendent world, you don't have to do it that way. You can shine white light, or you can show everything at once, and a person could understand that. But in this world, you can't do that. You have to break it down for me, give it to me in its components, exactly balanced correctly, which is what tonight's all about. And if the balance is correct, then I could experience the whole. So it has to be given in measurement. And if you think about it, that's what clothing is. Because character traits, what are character traits? Let's understand. How do you perceive me? How do you perceive a person in the world? You never perceive the neshama. The totality of what they are, you never see. Is that right?
All you see is the way they behave.
You see the way they express their personality in the world, but you only see the expression. Is that right? You only see them when they're angry, generous, sad, happy, giving, taking. You see the action, you see the expression, but you never see the personality. Which is a very sad thing, because actually the person doesn't experience himself that way. You don't experience yourself as giving now, taking. You experience yourself as the oneness of what you are. It's a remarkable thing that your own awareness of your own inner being is actually an awareness of always the same thing. Unless you have mental problems. But a person is normal, persons who are normal psychologically, has a perception of themselves as a total being, no matter what they're doing. If you're thinking, creating, remembering, giving, talking, doing, it doesn't matter. Your awareness that you carry around of yourself is always one total thing. But I never feel that of you. No matter how intimately you know someone else, you never feel the totality of their being. The only way you ever feel them is by this thing that they do to you, this thing, this thing, this thing, and as you watch them, but again, like music, what happens is, as the person expresses themselves through the whole range of what a person is, you get a feeling of who they are. When you think about a person that you know, when you think about someone you know, you don't think about them, you don't flash in your mind through actions that they do or did. You have a picture of the totality of the person and you have a feeling about it. You can't put it into words unless you break it down again, because words are finite. If you want to tell me who they are, somebody comes to you and they're interested in a certain shidduch. So they ask you about that person. But you can't spit out your feeling, your totality of perception of that person. So you've got to start explaining. That's where all the trouble happens. Because when you start breaking it down into detail, it doesn't always sound that good. And when you break it down into finite components. But it needs a lot of talking to give the person some impression about who the person is. And then you'll never get it right. When he meets the person, in 2 seconds, he can have a gut feeling about who this person is that his own neshama could grasp, that you could never convey by trying to put it into words. That's how the world works. The inner dimension, what you sense of yourself, and if you're sensitive to others, you could sense it in a higher way, always grasps the totality. But what's manifest in the world, always broken down. And that's why your personality is called midas. Because it's the way the neshama breaks down into components. The neshama never shines in the world. It only manifests as anger, this, that, each. That's why it's called a midah. And of course, that's what clothing is. Clothing is the way your body is presented. The personality traits of the aspects of the neshama that come out into the world. You never come out, you stay hidden inside. But your neshama is closed by your midas. Your midas, whether you're an angry person or a generous person or a giving person or a person, whatever it is, that's the way your personality is clothed. And that's what I see. I never see you, I only see the clothing. Just like the body. Your body is what you are, but I don't see that. I see the clothing. But if the clothing is worn correctly, it shows me what your body is. That's why the mystics say that clothing hides and reveals. Let's say a king. A king wears certain clothes. So you don't see the king. It hides him, but you see the king. It reveals who he is. That's why it says Hashem wears the world like a garment. He wears light like a garment. Because it means that if you look at Hashem's garment, if you look at the world, you'll see it hides him. Because you see a world, you don't see Hashem. But if you look carefully, you'll see who's wearing the clothes. The way a person moves. The way they wear their clothing. What they choose to wear. The way they express themselves in their clothing, within their clothing, and through their clothing. That's how you see who the person is. Very important thing. Actually, the world wasn't designed that way. The body was supposed to be the revelation of what the person is inside. But we fell to a situation where the body didn't reflect the person anymore. So we had to cover it with blood before Adam. Before Adam broke down the connection between the inner and the outer world, it didn't have to wear clothing. Because the body was such a reflection of this internality that they reflected each other exactly. That's why there was no shame. But today we live in a state where the body doesn't reflect the internality. On the contrary, it's a very embarrassing experience to show the body. Because it doesn't reflect the spiritual beauty inside. It looks like a horse. And therefore, we clothe it, we cover it so that you don't look like a horse. That's why we wear clothes. Of course, that's why this generation, which has an ideology of being animals, that's why its clothing has degenerated into what this generation has. It's undignified clothing that this generation wears. It makes no difference between male and female, usually. Right? And it's a tendency towards much less expression and dignity in clothing. There was a generation, and all generations, until this one, saw clothing as an expression of dignity. But this generation tries to look. People try to walk around these days dressed in a sack on somebody's billboard, you know, somebody's product advertised on their sack. That's what people try and look like. It's not an expression of dignity of what it means to be human. That's why people used to wear hats. the previous generations, because a hat is a garment that's only an expression of dignity. It's only worn as a mitzvah. It doesn't cover you. It's not like a covering that keeps you warm. It's specifically on the highest part of the body. It's an expression of dignity. That's a chassidim where a shrine on Shabbos, a special hat. On Shabbos, when that part glows more brightly, that's emphasized. That's the connection between personality traits, middah, clothing, which is an expression to the outside, and measurements in general. Let's just finish with this last idea on this theme, and we'll try, yes, maybe come back to it, and start working out what are the seven and exactly what can one work on specifically. One beautiful application of just the last idea that we've mentioned that a person can use to understand this more deeply, which is not so mystical, is like this. The inner being that you have, your neshama, actually is expressed within you in one way and expressed outside in another way. This is an idea that a person is not maybe so interested in the mystical understanding, maybe, but he can actually work on himself. This is the first thing a person has to know. Maybe next week or when we get another chance, we'll try and actually start working out actually what are the components. But first, one needs this idea. The Bible wants to say this, that a person's personality has two components. If you listen carefully to this, you have what's called tchunos and what's called midas. Tchuna means an inner component of your personality, and a midah means the clothing or external part of the personality. The difference is this. Your body you can't change, but your clothing you can change. And that's how your personality is. A tchuna you can never change. If you're born with a personality, if you're born with a certain kind of personality in the world, you can never change that. You'll never, ever, cannot ever change that. But the midas, the way that character is expressed in the world, you can change. It's very hard to trail yourself out of one pattern of midas, but it can be done. Remarkable. That means some people are born with tchunas like this, and some are born with tchunas like that, but they can never change them. But the way the tchunas come out in the world, you can change. Let's give an example, make it easier to understand. What's a midah? What's a tchuna? A tchuna would be, for example, somebody who is, let's say, very quick to react. That's one of the tchunas of the personality. Right? A person is what they call volatile. That means you react in a very hot-blooded and quick, right? You're close to the boil. That can never, ever be changed. Can't ever be. It's got beauty and it's got danger. If you react quickly, so you'll be able to react in situations where you need to react fast and save what needs to be saved or express what needs, but on the other hand, you'll put your foot in it because you'll react in a place where you should have thought. That's to be always balanced. There's never anything in the world that's good or bad. It's just a power and depends how you use it. That's called a tchuna. Some people are slow to react. Yeah? They're born with what's called a phlegmatic personality. Doesn't mean you cough a lot. It means, you know, it means you have a slow-moving personality. It has a fantastic side, is that you won't get angry fast. Right? When challenged, you will not get angry. On the other hand, where you need to act fast in the world, to save a situation or do something, you might be too slow. Those can never be changed. The middas are the way that's expressed in the world. For example, anger. Anger is a middah. So a person who's quick to react, it comes out as anger. That can be changed. No, you can control the expression of the tchuna. You can't make yourself a slow-reacting person. If you are by nature a person who reacts with great intensity, let's say, right? Great intensity naturally. You can't kill that. You can't not react with intensity, but you can certainly control the way you express it in the world. It's very hard, but it can be done. And the person who reacts with great intensity, so he must, or with great rapidity, let's say, a person like that must learn when to let the tchuna come out immediately and when to put a brake on it. Again, he's choosing how the inner being will be reflected, will be manifest in the world. Somebody who is slow to respond must know when that should be expressed and when that must be controlled, not expressed. That is, the work we have to do is to perceive first what is the personality, what is it that you're given, where are your tchunas, what are you exactly, personality-wise? There are not that many tchunas. What are they exactly that you have? And you get familiar with your own personality. And then you start making a program, what are going to be the middle, the 49 ways in which these tchunas, this pattern, is going to be expressed in the world. Is it better to use these tchunas as an energy to express more this pattern, or more that pattern? And if you do that, so then you're using the machine that you were given in the best way. Nobody takes a machine and uses it for something it wasn't designed for. And to break the machine and not do the job. Therefore, a person must take what they were given, figure out, understand what that is, and then work out how to control and apply and experience those elements in the world. And that's what these 49 days are about. They are about experiencing an uplift of your personality at Pesach, being given a tremendous light of inspiration, like we tried to discuss together, and then working out the painful side, how am I going to express it today? The first week is Chesed. That means you work on giving, unconditional giving. No limitation at all. Just giving for the sake of giving. Second week, you work on discipline. The third week, which is this week, that's the two opposites. First giving and then withholding. Tonight, this week, you work on the balance between the two. And today's exercise, I want to work on from tonight and tomorrow, is the perfect balance between giving and discipline. What would be some examples? And we'll leave it at that. Classic would be marriage. First of all, we need one introduction, and that is that when we say that the seven manifest in the world, they always go in order. Right? You can never mix up the order. Each one that comes before another one subsumes that other one. The first one is called chesed, which means love and giving. Anything that comes after that is only a way of loving and giving. There's no such thing as discipline for its own sake. That's crazy. The first thing is chesed. The second is withholding of the chesed, but you only withhold the chesed in order to give chesed. For example, with a child. A child, the only thing you want to give the child is love. But you have to discipline the child, but you only discipline him so that he can experience the love. And then a discipline for the sake of discipline, that's plain cruelty. The only reason you withhold something is so that you can manifest, if you would not, when it comes to something dangerous or bad, you have to withhold it. Why do you withhold and cause pain or punish? So that the child can experience only out of love. Each one in the series only is a way of expressing the previous one. Are you with me? Not three things, only one thing, only chesed, only love, only giving. But then you need discipline so the love can be manifest, or you drown somebody. Right? You kill a child if you only give him everything he wants all the time. Comes discipline. Where do you find the balance? That's the third. The third day is the concept of balancing the two opposites. It's the thing that makes the previous two make sense. Before they were a conflict, you have to give the child love, on the other hand you have to withhold it. That's a conflict. The third is not a new thing. It's just the way the two balance so that they both are manifestation of one thing, which is what the world really is, which is kindness. If you want an intellectual illustration, in Torah it says that an intellectual illustration of this is that one thing in Torah, then you have a contradiction to it. The third thing puts the two of the contradiction together. But it doesn't. It's not a third thing. It's actually the first and the second that actually fit together. Give an example. If I say to you, the library is closed on Wednesday. No problem, right? Then if I say to you, the library is open on Wednesday, you're in trouble. Then if I say to you a third statement, the library is closed in the mornings and open in the afternoons, what happens? All I did was, you follow, everything fits together now. Nothing needs to be adjusted. Everything's true. And the truth of the whole thing comes. A third always brings you the truth of the first two. That's what it is. And therefore, that's the way. When a child has to be related to, so you give chesed, you give discipline. How much exactly? That's an art of balance. Marriage is another thing. In marriage, you never give discipline. In marriage, you give only chesed. And on your partner, you give chesed. To you, you give gvura. That's how marriage is. The partner, you only give chesed. And to you, you give gvura. Discipline. You yourself control. Only control. For your partner, the spouse, you give only chesed. You don't teach that. You don't withhold for them. Right? You give for them. For you, you withhold. But of course, they're doing the same for you. And the balance is how you put together, which is exactly what marriage is. That's exactly what it is. Tonight is a night, today is a day, when a person can establish balance. They've maybe been given too much, giving too much. Don't have enough control. They give in areas where a person shouldn't be giving. That's called chesed. That's why the Torah talks about sexual immorality. It's called the chesed. On Yom Kippur, when we read all the forbidden sexual relationships, it's always said ki chesed, because it is kindness. What does that mean? Because chesed means giving. It means not knowing when to say no. It means giving everywhere, even in the wrong place. That's what chesed is. Unconditional, unquestioning giving. Giving an inner power. Giving the real you. That has to be disciplined. Giving the wrong place is not chesed anymore. It's death. Chesed means giving, but only in the right place, in the loyalty of what marriage is. That's called chesed. Chesed is when it's disciplined so that it's only applied in the right place. That's chesed. How do you know where yes and where no? That's called the healing power of the third level of these seven, which is what tonight's all about.